time for The Daily Review, a podcast dedicated to reviews and discussion of TV, movies, and books. Look for us at Daily Review on Facebook and Twitter and dailyreview.com on the web. That's DaleyReview.com. This is Paul Daly here with my wife, Caroline.
Hey, guys.
And today we're here to talk about the finale of the first season of Spike TV's The Mist. This one was called The Tenth Meal.
You were super smart and understood that immediately. I was like, I don't understand.
If you recall, Eve had mentioned something along the lines of 9 meals is all it takes for things to go to hell. And so this one is called The Tenth Meal. Given the way this this all comes out in the end, it's fair to say
it's super accurate, it turns out. Kind of frightening.
Who do we want to start with this week?
So if you're just joining us, we always try to get out of the regular old, just repeat exactly what an episode did scene by scene. And we try to go back and try to group things up either by character or groups of characters to try to make a little bit more sense of how they actually grew and changed in that exact episode. So we're going to start off with Gus and the group we lovingly call the Mall Rats. They were the folk that stayed with Gus.
Yeah, grew and changed might not really apply to this bunch, though.
Grew is probably not even the right tense there, but their growth, if you will. So we had the end of rations, Paul. We had to get that saltine package shoved in Gus's nose.
Yeah, which when I saw that, I know I was supposed to focus on this whole group supposed to share these crackers, and I was like, I've never seen a box of crackers like that. What kind of crackers are those? Those don't look like any crackers I've ever seen.
Right. Is this a sort of mall cracker that they only sell there?
They shot in Canada. Those must be what Canadian crackers looks like.
And then they'd be called like biscuits or something.
Right.
Ain't no way they were called crackers.
Oh, my God.
So right when they're about to start freaking out, right, and lose their shit, the security guard is really, really riling the crew up. And the only thing that settles them down a little bit is that Chief Connor comes waltzing through.
You think this was what was supposed to tip us off that the security guard was at the end of his shitty little rope? He shoots someone later, right?
Yeah.
So here, he's tired of dealing with Gus and his run around and blah, blah, blah. And he's just going to say, I'm just going to tell everybody. This is it.
I think it's funny that like the chief of police comes to do the smackdown on the mall cop. I think that's kind of funny. So they expect Connor to, you know, save the whole day here. They expect the rest of the police force is all here and they're all saved and it's all over.
They could not find a wronger tree to bark up.
I felt super bad because Connor was honestly sorry to have to tell them. I don't think he put it together that they would all be so excited to see him and so ready for this to be over. He's under this insane trance with Natalie. He's just like, where's my son? And they're like, oh, the entire police department's here. And his eyes, you can tell he's like, oh man, like, oh crap. Like, I wasn't expecting to have to break this to all of you peeps.
Like, I'm still wearing this? Oh yeah.
Kind of, yeah. Oh yeah, I am the chief of police. Oh yeah, I'm actually responsible for all these people. Yeah, he kind of had that weird look on his face.
Well, and he's also undergone Natalie's crash course in brainwashing, so...
Oh no, he's a mess.
The spaced out eyes are just kind of part of the following nature's path.
I appreciated how Gus handled this and said, why don't we go talk privately? I think that was wise.
And a way to exert some amount of authority, right? Like, you're in my kingdom, so why don't we go to my keep and we'll talk things over.
I love that you say it that way because that's exactly how I felt. And in fact, the way that Connor even addresses him. At one point, you know, they're going back and forth about what's been going on. And, you know, these have been hard times. Doesn't it absolutely sound like two leaders of two different countries talking about things that have been happening? They're like, it's been hard times for our people.
Well, and it's been hard here, too.
Exactly. And he's like, people have died. One woman was killed by the Copeland girl. And Connor's like, what? You know, and then that whole part, oh, you know, you're trying to take justice in your own hands. And Gus was like, kind of, I thought like he a little bit, it was like a shot across the bow for Gus. Because the way he responded, he was very like, well, this is a private mall, you know, and that is like what you would say when you're like, this is my land. These are my rules. But the way that he has to keep using the word mall and they're like, this is a private mall and we throw people out of this mall if we want to. And then Connor's like, I'll just take my son and you can run your mall however you want. And that is like, replace the word country, but having to put in mall is like, oh, that's so embarrassing.
Gus's whole logic for anytime he needs to put up an argument definitely fits into that kind of box that gets built around these kinds of crazy insular emergency type situations, right? Where outside logic, the kind of logic you would apply to everything else in normal life, would take that apart right away. Like, this is a private mall, whatever, you know? Or right. Like later on when the security guard shoots Kimmy and he's like, well, she was gonna break the rules.
No, we have the right to defend ourselves. That's what he says.
No, he says she was gonna break the rules. Who? What? What rules? She was just saying don't push them around, right? It was
a lot of
flimsy.
That whole part was a whole conversation about rights. Kimmy was saying she has the right to stand up for herself, and he was saying I have the right to defend our group and everything. And it was very much, again, very. You don't want to say political, but very much like citizens of a country talking about their country and the way that their society runs.
It ended up being more like Lord of the Flies, like you've pointed out.
Heck yeah.
Several times.
100 times over. So Gus does lead him off to go get Jay. And back at Jay's storage closet, there's been plenty of hubbub going on.
Did you get at all uncomfortable with the way that Eve just allowed Adrian to continue beating Jay?
The way that they treat all the children as if they are adults has bothered me since day one. So yeah, I have a real issue with being an adult parent. She's supposed to be a teacher in this story. Having one teen beat another teen with a paint can, I would instinctually grab back Adrian and say, like, stop. Because, you know, you would just break up a fight amongst children. You just would do that.
Now, we're given later on the whole picture on how everyone is related and how it's not just Jay and Alex that bugs her. It's brother and sister that bugs her. And that's been ooking her out this entire time, which is 100% legit. But still, that doesn't mean you let the kid get beat with a paint can.
No, I just think, like I said, instinct. If I just saw two strangers and they were, I'm a parent and they're obviously kids and I teach that age group, I would be just, you know, it would just be like regular everyday, like, hey, y'all, knock it off.
Eve is not my favorite character in this show at all.
She's rough. Tell me, why do you not like her?
Well, that scene kind of iced it for me. I couldn't really put a description to it, except she was always just very cold and aloof, and her never explaining her logic to anybody came back and got her. And in that kind of frame of mind is what kept her in that cold, aloof kind of mode throughout the rest of the series. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So the whole that it adds up to, I wouldn't like her in real life.
I don't think I would either. I was asking in previous episodes for new information to come out about the rape scene in order for all of our characters at the mall to be able to change how they feel about it. Adrian, again, with these massive lies. I was so surprised when he lays out this DNA testing and they had spoken to the doctor at the hospital. Were you taken aback by all that, or how did you feel?
I was not taken aback. I was knowing that he was just lying. He was just lying.
Did you expect him, though, to have such a complex story that, like, we were at the hospital and we talked to the doctors and the DNA test came back? Like, to me, that just was... I expected him to say, I saw him. I was in the closet, just like I told you before. That's all I expected him to say. So for him to have like conjured up a new lie that was really complex, I was surprised.
We saw last episode how he practiced his lies.
Yes.
In the optician store.
Yes. So, the optical of lies.
Right. So I would say that he is probably a very practiced and skilled liar. The idea of needing to cover your tracks and come up with the right details is probably not new to him.
He was very good at it. It was convincing. And I keep trying to put myself in Alex and Eve's position in terms of the amount of information that I've been given so far and what I would have been able to piece together. And that would have been a complete mind F, because, you know, she was just kissing on Jay and somehow had come to some conclusion. Again, Jade never offered up any story. He never gave the information I was craving of something, some timestamp on his phone, something to show her that I wasn't in the room at the time that this was happening. I don't know what that would have looked like, but I was wanting that so badly.
You know, I was thinking about it just right now when you were talking about that. With all that kissing If she would have just said, "You're kissing your brother," that would have been like, "Oh shit, we're not going to do that anymore." But even though she had appeared to have kind of washed her hands of Kevin throughout most of the season, if she would have said that, she would have been basically going all the way with that, saying, "I don't care what Kevin feels anymore. Kevin didn't want me to tell you, but now he's out of the picture, so I'm just going to tell you." But she didn't. Maybe she wasn't as far gone with Kevin as I thought.
I see what you're saying there, especially after they knew that he had passed away, or, you know, I've been told he had passed away. You would have thought that it would have been a lot easier than to just go ahead and tell Jay and Alex what was going on, you know?
Well, if you want the kissing to stop.
And why they can't be around each other.
Right.
I would want the kissing to stop, for sure. So I want to talk about a scene that I thought was really skillfully shot that came next. When Connor came in to get Jay, here was Jay so excited, so overwhelmingly relieved to see his father. Can you imagine how you would feel to have been locked up by these people and be beaten with this paint can? His hands were all covered in gauze from that fire. And to see your dad, the chief of police, like stride in the door.
Yeah, I'd feel like I'd been saved.
It would have been amazing, right? And everyone else is like clamoring to Connor, like, "Oh, save me too." And the way that they shot that scene where Connor and Jay take up the entire doorway as they're leaving, my first gut thing was like, "The door's open. Run, girls, just run." You know, that's how I felt.
Yeah.
And I could care about Adrian, but run, girls, right? Adrian can stay in the storage closet. But right when Connor and Jay clear the doorway, there's Gus with the baseball bat. Holy hell. I like dropped my soda when I saw him standing there because that was just so well choreographed. That was a true reveal, like in capital letters, like, "And here's your fate, girls."
Right. Here comes the judge.
Here comes the judge. It was wicked.
Before Connor goes to get Jay, he and Natalie have a little pep talk ahead of time.
Connor seemed like he was actually getting some cold feet, right?
Well, yeah, her expectation was fully that he was going to go get his son, throw him out in the mist, and whatever happens, happens, right?
She expected the mist to clear up, like that was going to be the cure. Although I have a whole nother theory on Natalie and Jay and this entire situation. Okay, so these weird conversations that Natalie has with Connor have led me to believe that maybe there is more than meets the eye here with Natalie, and whatever she thinks Jay represents and whatever's going on with her own past, she seems to be twisting up a bunch of stuff in her head. So here are some thoughts that I had been mulling over. When Connor brings Jay back to Natalie, she uses the strangest adjectives to describe this smelly teenage boy.
Right.
She uses words like, "He's so soft and he's so beautiful." The way that she's acting with him, I would say those are words you would say about a baby. She continues to kind of walk down the crazy road and starts calling Connor Benedict.
Now that had Connor had any of his old self bubbling above the surface should have been enough to tell him, "Oh, this lady just has dementia. She's not sent here on behalf of nature. She's just making this shit up as she goes along."
They move forward and they actually do take Jay and push him out of the mall door. Now, I have to ask you about this whole scene. First of all, I'm going to talk to you as a dad. So as a dad, do you think that you could have gone through with this in any form or fashion?
Nope. My son trusts me and I love him. And there is no reason that some person that I met 9 meals ago or, you know, at least engaged with any serious time spent with just as recently as 3 days ago or however long, that they would override all those feelings of all those years of raising my son.
What do you think is behind Connor's true belief that he thinks Jay is just this wicked bad seed? Like, he used the line, "You don't know Jay like I know him."
I think he is doing that classic TV father stuff about seeing something in himself and projecting it onto his kid. So I think he knows that he was probably a piece of shit as a younger guy.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. I mean? Yes, 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 yes. So again, I love that because then moving forward with Natalie's story, I think that there's a huge parallel with Jay and this apparent dead baby that Natalie collects from Benedict later that comes after they throw Jay out into the mist. Then we have later Benedict coming in from the mist with this baby. And I think she is like looking at this stuff as all one and the same. I think somehow that someone else's baby being killed is somehow bringing her dead baby back to her. And that entire scene of her breastfeeding, oh my God. And, you know, Benedict is saying, I'm sorry, you know, and her just keeping using the phrases like losing someone you love can be so beautiful. And I think that somehow she's meshing whatever happened with her baby with Benedict and somehow thinking that Connor and Jay are now Benedict and this baby. And there's somehow some sort of parallel there.
Yeah.
And what you're saying is interesting to me, that if Jay is somehow being represented as Connor to Connor's brain, mm-hmm. you know, and he's trying to throw out some bad, seemingly mistakes that he made, obviously, with Eve, we know, mm-hmm. then we know that after Eve got pregnant, that she was considered as like a town whore, right? As illustrated by one of the mall rat old men. Yes, because she always was a whore.
Thank you for adding that.
Right when they were throwing them out, you guys go back to this episode and watch right when they're throwing them out or getting ready to throw them out. And this old man in the background goes, she always was a whore. What do you know, Amos? What are you doing back there yelling such things? But it reminded me again that, oh yeah, remember, Eve said that she had sex with a guy and he went around and trashed her reputation. So now I think we can put together that obviously would have been Connor. And so in that case, if he was that guy as a teenager, then you're right. I think projecting himself onto Jay and thinking, oh no, this is this bad kid and you don't know the things he's done like I know, I think you're dead on, right? Do you think then is he actually brainwashed just by the mist, or do you think Natalie and Connor and all the people who have been in the mist now, as they both have, do you think that they've been brainwashed by the mist?
I'm willing to go along with the idea that exposure to the mist does leave you susceptible to something afterwards. You know what I mean? Like because we've seen in many cases a lot of changes in the way people act, particularly like Kevin, you know, for one thing. I know he's had to adapt. But he's been in the mist as much
a
as
lot.
Anybody. And,
yeah.
And now, by the end of this, he's willing to kill a lot of people.
That's true. He's a very different person. Very, very different. So, yeah, talk about Kevin, man. Don't you think he has just been like a 180 here?
Totally. From the original guy who was like the, we need to let our daughter have a little more fun, you know,
and willing to kind of break those rules that were like, I think this guy at the end would never go against Eve at the end here. I think like he would stand behind Eve. And if your mother said not to do it, you don't do it. Don't you think that's the father and the person he is now?
I think that there's some chance this Kevin, as opposed to the Kevin that would sneak around his wife and tell their daughter, go out, but just don't tell your mom. I think there's a chance that this Kevin would be the, no, I said she could go out kind of guy at this point, which would be also kind of a big shift in their relationship, obviously. But I think there's a chance that that's who Kevin is now.
You're right. That makes total sense. Like, he wouldn't bow down to Eve. He would just have a completely different dynamic in the relationship. That completely makes sense to me. Did you believe that when he found Adrian that he was going to let that boy live?
No. And in fact, I kind of liked the, after, you know, several minutes of relentless beating, he says, I haven't decided if I'm going to let you live or not. I might just take you right to the very edge of killing you and then let you live if you tell me what I want to know. Great dad stuff. I got that locked away in the vault just in case I ever need it.
I approve of you using that on anyone who's raped any of our children.
You heard it here first, people.
Total stamp of approval on that. You take him right to the edge of death. And then you know what? Then if you want to put him over to the judge, go ahead.
But I'll flip a coin. I'll make it real, like, comic booky.
And I'll say whatever you want me to say about what happened in this situation. No problem. What do you think about Adrian in that hardware store? What do you think he was making?
Given that he has a weird looking bottle kind of thing and a section of cloth, and later on we learn that he has a lighter, I'm given to believe that he was creating a Molotov cocktail. How such a device would be of any use in what is going on here, I can't imagine, other than just creating absolute chaos. If you say threw it at the collection of mall rats or something like that, that's all you might get. But I mean, it's definitely not like this is going to fix everything kind of weapon. And then after he's done getting beaten and he lights the spill on fire and it spreads like that, that's what makes me think this is definitely some kind of homebrew Molotov cocktail. What do you think he was planning on doing with that Molotov cocktail?
All I can guess is that he was going to use it anytime that he was going to be backed into a corner.
It's just a lousy weapon for that. It's a distance sort of thing, because you don't want the fire to get onto you. You know what I mean?
I don't know that I mean a physical backed into a corner. I mean, it's a diversionary kind of thing, right? Where you could like huck it into a group, or you could huck it into any type of area and make people scatter and freak out, right?
It's you could like, use it for that, but it like, could also be definitely offensive. Like, I'm trying to hurt you.
Like, but it's just unpredictable. But you don't use it to hurt like an individual typically, right? I mean, you would throw it into a crowd of people, right?
Yeah.
And so that's all I can think of is that he would use it as some sort of diversionary thing. The thing that, of course, grosses me out is that only Adrian in this group would be thinking of offensive weapons like that. Because I don't think of it as defensive at all. It's completely, right. You're going to attack a bunch of people who are not paying attention, not realizing what you're going to do.
It's a terrorist's weapon.
Absolutely. Which, what does that make Adrian? If the cocktail fits.
Right. So ultimately, Adrian ends up hiding in Wes's car out in the mist.
Yeah, and that's basically where his story ends for us in this season. What do we think about Adrian overall here from start to finish, since he kind of has a pretty wrapped up situation here?
Piece of slimy shit. Yes, I mean, he started out posing as Alex's best friend, but then creating a trap for her so that he could rape her. And then when separated from her, he rapes a boy in the hospital bathroom and then messes with his mind a lot. When he is rejected by that boy, then he's ready to pick things up on Project Alex again until Kevin catches up with him. There's not really like a lot of character growth in terms of making what was a piece of shit into a redeemable person. He just kind of sunk further.
One thing that I super appreciated was that everyone knows, you know, Adrian's background. Typically, when you have someone who's being like a liar, anything like that, you end up having, you know, one person in the group know, but maybe other people be not so sure or that type of thing. In this case, we had various scenarios where Kevin spread the word to everybody the whole time. Everybody's been kept up to date, including periphery people. Mia knows, you know, that didn't necessarily, it wasn't like mother and daughter and only know or something like that. Like, everybody knows. I think that's really, really important.
I don't know if Mia told enough to Jonah. She just said basically that Kevin's alive, but she didn't unfold it, because Jonah wasn't really, as they say on TV, he wasn't trying to hear that.
Well, that is very true. So then I would agree with you. So then that is going to be a problem, because when Adrian's found with Wes and Jonah at Arrowhead, he's just going to plead like, oh, no, look what happened. I just ran out. Kevin.
Right. I walked into a door.
You're right. Like, he's going to start into a new group of people over there who don't know what he's been up to.
Or this would be a stretch since he's a kid, but they might be really hard up and this is TV. What if he joined them in some way? Then he becomes part of their crew, basically.
I definitely think he's going to join them in some way. I definitely do.
He's too young to join like as a soldier, but like I said, this is TV.
He'll just still be hashtag Team Arrowhead, that's all. Which is kind of right, because they kind of seem like they're the mean people, right?
They are the unexplained party that seems to know more than everybody else in a dangerous situation. So, Like, I've been kind of thinking of them like Hawkins Labs, and definitely Hawkins Labs was the bad guy, right? Right.
Evil. Evil.
All right, let's rewind chronologically just a little bit and cover the whole, we've been calling it the judgment scene. Gus brings Alex and Eve back to the central area where they cast judgment. We already mentioned that this is when Kimmy was shot just for talking.
Which is so crazy.
Because she was gonna break the rules, you know, because we prosecute pre-crime just the same as we do crime now in the mall.
Right. It's a mall crime, Paul. That's an entirely different.
And this is a private section. Mall, so we do have separate laws here.
Rules.
Right.
How did you feel about Eve's admission? Connor's the dad. Alex couldn't be with Jay. But they all spoke about it in like kind of funny ways. Like how Eve was like, you couldn't be with Jay for other reason. Like it was like, what? And she's like, do you understand? Like she never said he's your brother. They never said those words.
You didn't need to at that point. Anybody could figure out the family tree, given the clue she finally gave. And she had to. It was life and death. She didn't know about Kevin yet. And the chief of police was standing there, who is also your daughter's father. He has the power to say,
everybody
no one
back
touches
off.
Her.
Right.
But he didn't.
He did not. Now, what do we think about that? What gives, Connor?
He was like totally Maury Povich show all up in there, right?
He was all, I am not the father.
Yeah, and there was no one there to be like, boo, boo.
No, instead you have that old man go, Showers was a whore. Which right. was very Maury.
If you turn up the volume during this whole period, you can hear people saying the dumbest stuff.
Oh, it's hilarious. Someone would say something and then someone in the crowd goes, God. It's so funny.
Right, when Kevin shows up.
And yeah, someone like, goes, God. It's like, oh, what? That was a little out of line. Super out of line. So what do we think about this? How do we feel about when Kevin does show up and then Gus lays out his snark sandwich?
I appreciate Kevin. I mean, he was like the new guy in prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, I'm going to have to start a fight.
Basically, right. He like runs in. He's all like, hug, hug, hug. And then like, and then we get the whole Gus. What kind of family is this? Your wife screwed this chief. And the daughter's not even your own. What kind of family is this? Or something. Not much of a family. That's what he says. Not much of a family. Yeah. And then they did what I think is fascinating. And they've been doing this throughout the whole season. They had Kevin go, fuck you. And they beeped it. Rather than him saying, screw you. Or rather than them skipping the language altogether.
We haven't watched any other Spike original programming. So I can't say whether or not Spike does this all the time. We've mentioned that the showrunner was European. I think I said he was Swedish. I think he's actually Danish. But, you know, it's all the same. And the point is, though, profanity isn't such a big deal on European TV. So what if he just had the top-down direction that he wanted the same intensity that the actors would bring to using the F word? So he didn't want to sacrifice not using it, basically.
Given that this is a Stephen King story, maybe they plan to put it out on DVD or downloadable right. or something with yeah. the language.
The unrated version.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a different way to watch TV because I've never had them have it where this was a TV show meant for a TV and we're going to say the F word and we're going to bleep it out. But you can tell, obviously, see, your mouth said, fuck you.
Yeah.
I've never had it be produced that way. So that was new. I don't know what I think about it because obviously we have kids around and they're not watching this program with us or anything. But at the same time, I feel like, I don't know. Is that totally on the level or not? I'm not sure. It's interesting. It's new.
I know you didn't watch a lot of Sons of Anarchy, but these were bikers, right?
Sure. And
so they use the saltiest language available.
Yeah, real salty.
So what they would do was something like bad word replacement. They would use a common word that could, in very crude terms, mean the intended swear word. And so that's how they would use all different kinds of, they would have the whole palette of profanity kind of available to them using these alternate words.
Very like frack you-ish.
Very much like frack, but bikery.
Frack is very space.
Right. You've got it. You've got it. So.
Well, what would a biker say? Funk.
Right. But you could, but when some, if imagine that. So the biker is in a life and death fight with a rival gang. He gets in another guy's face and he's like, funk your mother. Like it just doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't work. Right.
Right. It takes you out of the moment.
It does. This is not what he would say in any possible way.
Right. And you're very
unless
aware.
This was a disco fight. Right.
Nice. And you're very aware you're watching a TV show then.
Yeah. I guess that's just the direction they decided to go. Obviously, with The Mist, they were like, we'd rather have him say it and then just beep it out.
Beep it. Okay. Intrigue. Intrigue.
That's my guess.
What was it exactly that prompted Natalie to start doing her strange Nat-splaining version of the Black Spring and what was going on?
She says something about that the Mist will now probably go away.
The group, of course, is like, what the hell?
Please expand on that.
Natalie's explanation of Black Spring, it was so strange to hear what had been sprinkled throughout the entire season, the bear story and the spider and the moth and the everything. You know, those were just small moments, you know, along the way. Right?
Yeah.
And when she compiles them all together into this, like, here is the big Wikipedia page of what is going on right now, it sounded so incoherent. Do you remember, Paul, that one summer when we watched court TV incessantly?
Yes.
And we watched that one trial and there was like those two sisters.
Yes.
And the one was always like, and, like the thing she would say was just like all over the place. Do you remember what the judge would always yell?
You're incoherent.
And you'd make her get off the stand. That's probably why I got a C in class that semester.
I bet it was. If the class was on OJ, you would have known.
Damn, I could tell you everything about Judge Ito and what was going down.
So when people explain stuff like this, it reminds me of, remember in E.T. when Elliot explains Earth to E.T.?
Oh, God.
And remember,
no.
Elliot's like 9 or whatever, and he's explaining, well, this is Yoda, and then this is Earth, and he has like this little ball, and he does some other crap around his room, and it's just like a totally, you know, mishmash of details that don't connect.
If you start off when you're talking and someone says explain Earth, and the first thing you do is say, well, this is Yoda, you've right. already been like, wait, what? This is a jumping off point that could really get dicey, I feel like.
Well, she sounded just like that.
She did. And the way even that she was trying to say the part, like she's like, and the cubs and the moth.
Started with the spider.
And the thing. And you're like, what? And the face that Connor gives her, like, I have been following
holy turd sandwiches.
You are like the witch of Black Spring. Holy smokes, that just went bananas. So I felt like the spell has been broken. You know, Connor's out from under her thumb. And, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't know what was going to come of Connor. And honestly, it wouldn't have shocked me if Connor, like, killed himself in the next scene, you know, mm-hmm. It would not have, because he finally kind of heard the words for as crazy as they really were.
Before Kevin went nuclear, Connor is kind of weighing his options, looking out the window, and he deploys his trusty pocket knife that he's used to end a few lives already.
I noticed that. What was he going to do?
I was about to ask you that.
Oh, I'm assuming, do you think kill Natalie or kill himself? Or what do you think?
Or take his chances out in the mist?
I'll like take your chances out in the mist. That's a good one.
But I think ending Natalie's prattle would probably be a close second.
That's awesome. Can you imagine? Just like, well, he had no problem with, what was it, Ursula? Giving her a little pointy edge.
He killed his son, basically. So, yeah, Natalie probably.
Well, and not only that, but Natalie brainwashed him into killing his son. So of anybody to be super pissed at.
Yeah.
Natster.
How do you feel about Kevin's decision to go nuclear? I'm 100% cool with it.
I was pretty surprised about it in the moment. I was like, what is he going to do here? It wouldn't cross my mind to do that. So I was surprised. It really came out of the blue for me. Do I back it? Like if I was in the car, would I be like, absolutely not. The only thing that I feel like I would have said maybe, is I would only just have been afraid that something would have happened, like to bash the windows of the car or make the car undrivable or something like that. Because it was taking, you know, an unnecessary risk with the car.
Oh, sure.
And so in that case, that would have been what I would have said. Now, would I have said, but all those people, you know, given what Eve and Alex and everybody had been through? No, I think I would have been like, fuck them. But I definitely would have been concerned about the getaway vehicle that, you know, was this like just really going way too far?
As I told you when we watched, that's why Demolition Derby vehicles are mostly station wagons, so they can back into things without anything hurting the car.
Oh, dang. I did not even realize.
Right. The engine's in the front. You don't want to mess that up.
Sure, sure.
In the back, it's much simpler.
Right? Sure. No, that totally made sense. And of course, I mean, you don't want anything coming through the windshield. So right. That all made sense. But I don't know. It was a chance. He was taking a chance. And I think that it was that one step beyond, too. Like, so the family was already safe. And now this is a guy who was having a hard time making moves to even get them to the safe place, right? Now, mm-hmm. This was a family that, for all intents and purposes, they were safe. He was taking the next step to actually be, like, offensive with, like, revenge-type moves.
I'm sure that'll earn a discussion later, but Kevin was not in a talking mood this afternoon.
Can you imagine if you were Vic sitting in the car and you're just, like, waiting, waiting, waiting? Then everyone comes running out and there's blood and guts and you watch Jay save Alex from the mist first. Because they, like, can see it in the, you know, with the headlights, and then proceed to watch Jay get his old, you know, spirit get sucked out and his eyeballs turn white and everything.
Now, here's where I think you mentioned that the shot with the reveal of Gus was very expertly done. And I would like to say that this sequence where Jay saves Alex and then Eve and Kevin pull Jay and Alex to their feet and then somehow Jay is killed a second later.
And they don't bother to try to help him at all. They just say, like, get in the car.
That did not add up to me at all because Alex had been sucking mist for like half a minute. And then Jay goes down with like 7 seconds of mist sucking.
And I would have thought that specifically Kevin would have wanted to try to save him out of that whole sense of regret and remorse that this kid had been painted to be this monster. And then you just watched him save your daughter from the mist and you wouldn't make any effort to try to grab him.
Well, he helped him up, but then all of a sudden he was 10 feet away from him.
I know. It just didn't make sense. I'm with you. That was a really sketchy part. And the idea of just being like, well, we have to walk away from him, Alex. Come on.
Right.
And that was like the whole excuse. And Eve especially too. Like, I don't know. I'm with you 100%. I do not like that scene.
Even if you couldn't kiss him anymore, he's still your half brother, right? So she would feel all kinds of messed up about this. Because it took forever to get her in the car and then to leave.
Oh, yes.
And meanwhile, he's like, I'm still dying.
Yes. He was dying the entire time. He didn't die until they were already in the car. And then Vic was like, whoa, that was messed up. All that time had passed. I don't know. It felt
forced.
Forced. Do you think that Jay will come back later, like as one of those zombie types in the mist?
Not living, obviously.
He'll be gone.
Sort of a Benedict, you know, there to bring some guilty memory. You let me die, kind of thing.
I was innocent the whole time.
Just before the nuclear option, Kevin explains to his family as quickly as possible what he learned about the whole rape thing. Mm-hmm. And the way he puts it leaves like really no room for argument.
It was the same exact way that Eve explained that Connor was the dad and that Jay was the brother. He says, well, who told you I was dead?
And it's like all of a sudden all the lights come on, mm-hmm. right? At least now there won't be anybody that could be possibly pulled in to Adrian's side of the story.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. But it only just left the two that he left with, Jonah and Wes. Those were the only two that don't know. Everybody else has been told, including after they do back in. What did you think about that part when Alex... Well, first of all, the car gets stuck, right? Which It was like, ooh. And then Connor is the one who decides to go and let them leave. Looks at Alex's face, lets them go, right? And then Alex is all, no, you know, you come with. Okay, so if you're Kevin, do you let Connor come with? Do you be like, sorry, Alex, and you like click the button and put all the child safety locks on and then just drive?
I mean, he's right there. The door's already open. I mean, the girl I've been raising as my daughter, even though this will very much complicate my life, his presence.
And how do you know?
If I just drive off without him, even though she's like, you know, yanking at him, I guess I can't have that.
Well, and how do you know that Connor's like going to be a normal person? He's already acted like up and down in your presence.
Story-wise, he is the definition of rock bottom. Right, so he can only improve.
Well, what would you? I mean, of course, what was the most rock bottom moment for him?
Rock bottom would be believing that your son had raped this girl, and then finding out from the girl that he saved her life and that it was all wrong.
He was always innocent. That would be awful. That'd be awful. And then now that goes hand in hand with what happens. Spoiler alert in the movie: the idea of the son of the father. Killing the son and then realizing at the last minute it didn't really have to happen. He didn't have to kill him.
Exactly
that was
right.
All for nothing.
Exactly right. It plays out with different mechanics.
But
the concepts are the same.
And the remorseful father and the dead son, you know, plays out well.
Yeah. Yeah. Good connection.
One big thing that I thought was that this was going to be a one season show. I really thought this was a summer 10 episode, one and done kind of thing. So when we realized what time it was and we realized that we weren't really going to have an ending here, what did you think?
Like Caroline's mentioning, there are two scenes that feed into a potential second season.
Has to be.
The first one we've already mentioned, which is Jonah and Wes in their vehicle driving away towards Arrowhead. But
with Jonah having been identified as the superior officer.
Right.
And the more important part was when he said the line, if you care about these people at all, you can never let them know who you are. Felt like, I gotta think that then don't you think he's the one that like ordered the mist?
That's what I was thinking. Like If this doctor person can fill in all the blanks, often in TV and movies, there's a pairing of the military and the science people. And so there's always top people in those slots and everyone else answers to them. He's kind of young for this, but maybe he is that top military side of the arrangement.
That makes sense to me. When we have Jonah and Wes take off and they say that Arrowhead's going to be like 2 or 3 hours away.
Crikey.
Do you think that the mist covers? Well, I mean, they must have given themselves some wiggle room, right? So then they must be able to drive out of the mist in like an hour or something. Because they can't go right up to Arrowhead's door. That would be crazy.
But it could.
You think?
I have no idea. Two or three hours? You know what kind of like estimation problem that is? 2 or 3 hours?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Shoot.
There's a big fucking difference between 2 and 3 hours. Right. Like, I'll tell you what. 2 hours is you go in the morning, you come back at night. If it's 3 hours, well, you spend the night.
Right.
That's how we do it in our household. No.
Right.
2 hours, you don't spend the night anywhere. You go and you come back. It's a long day, but it's a day, right? 3 hours, you're probably spending the night.
Right. You've made it all the way to Austin.
You're there now. And you're going to spend the night.
We just survived the whole Hurricane Harvey situation, and we know what it is like to be in the middle of a storm that covers 3 hours worth of travel time. That's freaking huge.
Well, and to that point, so when people say, why don't you evacuate? Why don't you go? And what's the battle cry? Where are you gonna go? You can't outrun something that is that large. Like, it's a mess.
So the other scene that hooks in to a second season is this bit with the train and
what
Kevin's
gang. What do you think was happening there? What is going on?
If he's right, his final line for the whole thing is they're feeding it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is preceded by these train cars opening, men wearing orange jumpsuits like prisoners would wear, being forced out, and men with masks and flashlights and probably guns doing the forcing out.
And they were yelling, get out, get out.
Right. If he's right, I wonder what that's all about. Like, by feeding it, that would mean you feed things that you want to stay.
Of course, yeah. Right? And you want to see what it's going to do. I'm taking it almost like it's your whole experiment idea, where the mist is equivalent to being in like a test tube or one of those, you know, in we just saw Independence Day over the summertime again. And you know how they have the aliens like in the tubes with the water? It's a little bit like that, like where you have the mist and it's like they've picked this town, this small sleepy town, and they're going to like let it go and they're going to keep feeding it and seeing like, well, what happens to this group of people? Do they go crazy? Do they get killed? Do they manage to create a new society that's safe and quiet over here? Like, what do they do? I want so badly to know what is the bigger question.
If it runs out of people, does it go away?
I don't know. Because if you have to feed it, it implies it has to live off of them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. It makes me wonder, what was the initial question for the experiment, right? In your old scientific method, you're supposed to have like an initial question. What is it you're trying to figure out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know, what is it? What was that part? Was it about how long till people go crazy? Was it about can people adapt? Was it about something more within the mist? What is it? What is this whole thing? I wasn't on board at the very beginning of this season. You know, the first couple of episodes, I was like, ooh, this is kind of inching around after school, especially. It was feeling kind of bad. But I really think it took a huge turn for me in, I believe it was the fifth episode, when they did the backstory with Eve and the fact that Kevin wasn't the dad. And we sort of started to get a little bit more meaty. And it really felt like every episode from there on out was throttling through the story. And I really appreciated that they did not hide information from one another with the characters. They didn't rely on that Three's Company misunderstanding kind of stuff. Like, there were true new problems they had to deal with, so they could actually let information out and deal with it and move on and move on and move on.
The show improved as we went, with the fifth episode, like you mentioned, being a huge jump in terms of quality and storytelling from the previous four. You know, these short format seasons, these 10 episode seasons like this, do lend themselves to this kind of accelerated storytelling that we're not used to on TV so much with 22 episode seasons. But I agree, I like it that even though it may be cashing in on the drama maybe a little quicker than we're used to, I like that the story itself gets to move quicker.
Absolutely.
As a result.
Well, because you, like I said, you don't rely on the you know, but I thought you said, and I thought she said, and there's just none of that. There's been no, quote, misunderstandings. People have flat out lied and have told the wrong information, but it was on purpose. It wasn't, there was no, like, I was given the wrong information and now I'm doing, you know, it was all very purposeful. Someone lied to you on purpose and now this happened.
Mm-hmm.
The other parts, too, that I thought it really improved was the way that it was shot as the different scenes went along. I felt like this finale, the scene with Kimmy shocked me completely. When she was standing, was like, took a couple steps up onto that fountain, and then he shot her and she smashed down into the water. That was actually like very satisfying as a viewer. I didn't expect him to shoot her. And it wasn't just like she just like crumpled to the floor. Like, there's this dramatic fountain splash kind of moment that happened. Same like with the way that they shot the Connor Gus part coming out of Jay's storage area. Like, there were some of those like, I didn't see that coming. And, it, you know, you actually caught me a little off guard.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. That so rarely happens in a way that's not just like ringing a loud phone and you jump in your seat like, oh no, you know, or just like a cat jumps onto the countertop or something and you're like, oh, you know, it's not those kind of scares. It's like actual, the way that they framed the shot and then the way that they actually executed it.
And they did it with a cast you've probably not seen a lot before.
Right.
And some of the cast, if you look them up, such as like Mia, they're not American. They're not even English as a first language. She's an actress in a country that does not speak English. Her real name is Danica Kursic, and she is from the former Yugoslavia. I guess they call it Serbia now. She was born in Belgrade. So she has quite a few credits over there. But I thought she did a pretty impeccable job with her English. And I think that'd be so hard, speaking a completely different language perfectly and being able to play a shifty character, someone that's not acting straightforward all the time. You know what I mean? She's got her own agenda and she's struggling with who can she trust? How far can she trust them? Finally, she just gives in to Kevin. Like, I will trust you. You know, I will stick by you.
What do you think about the way that Mia's story actually played out in this entire season?
If we get a season two, I would sure hope that they keep building her character because she has gone through this. We met her as a criminal. We met her as a drug addict. She just wants to give all that up and be a simple person, you know, for the rest of her life.
Yeah, but do you think that they oversimplified her by the end? I mean, by the end, she was equivalent of like Kevin's backpack.
She did not get any payoff, really. She got her kind of dealt with, but she didn't have a huge payoff moment.
All that time that she spent with Jonah,
came to nothing.
Yielded, yeah, just like a broken heart. I can't really imagine, since she has such attachment issues to begin with, the fact that she had, you know, pinky promised with him that they were going to stay together no matter what.
Oh, it's a big deal.
I think it's terrible. And it's a real juxtaposition to Kevin's character, who got rougher and tougher and more complex. And then here you have Mia, who went from this, like, what is up with this girl, to like, honestly, she's just another body in the back seat. Like, she doesn't have an agenda. She doesn't have any buddies, you know, to be like palling around with. She's going to be very much odd man out. Like, her and Vic, I guess, will like hang. But I mean, there's really, her story kind of just fizzled out.
You can't pay off everybody all the time, especially in these short seasons. And she was sacrificed for that, I guess.
I guess that's true. But she was in the original, you know? It was, you know, always that original group. And so it's kind of a bummer. She's pretty much the only one that really just went like, wah, wah.
Yeah.
You know, she really didn't get anything out of it.
Well, we don't find out much about Jonah, except that there's a lot more that we need to know.
Yeah. So what do you look forward to for season two?
I would like to know more about the mist. Like, why is it here? What do we know about it? Where is it from? Why does it seem to be able to think? You know, that kind of stuff. And I think I'm kind of due at least some of those answers, because I don't know that you get me coming back to season three without telling me some of those answers.
Well, and the name of the show is The Mist, right? Not the people who are involved with The Mist. You know, I mean, it's The Mist. So what's going on with The Mist? I agree with you. I really want to know that. I also think that we stand to have not exactly a love triangle, but a triangle of sorts with Connor, Kevin, and Eve. I mean, we've seen that before. Now, there's no reason why I have to think that Eve had some lingering feelings for Connor or anything like that. But I think that Alex's loyalty to, you know, having dad, you know, who she's known her whole life, to now finding out this is biological dad. And I think that you have Eve, who was very much falling out of love with Kevin and sort of, you know, like we thought, maybe just kind of neutral on Kevin for most of this season. She really didn't want him there, and she certainly wasn't looking for him to be the rescuer in any sort. So it's interesting now that we have the chief of police and Kevin, who's now become this, like, you know, He-Man type guy who's going to take action all the time. Where is that going to put Eve in this entire mix, and Alex for that matter?
I'm kind of curious to know if the new killer Kevin gets Eve's motor revving.
Oh, you think so? She never said anything other than like buckling up the seatbelts and stuff. Like, I mean, she wasn't like, oh no, I think that's bad. I mean, obviously, if what you are saying is correct, that Connor was projecting his old teenage self onto Jay and saying what a bad person that was and what a bad kid, then what does that say about Eve? That she would have been sleeping with him and hanging out with him, right?
Right.
So she obviously likes guys who are a little bit more edgy.
Yeah.
Have a sordid past.
Well, renewal-wise, it has not been picked up yet. It did not produce very noteworthy numbers either direction. They weren't like historically bad, but they weren't exactly earth-shattering for cable either. They were average for cable.
Interesting.
But they definitely fell from the beginning of the show to the end, with it kind of evening out toward the end.
Well, for us as Daily Review, and historically, we've only dropped one show in the history of our podcast, and that was Fear the Walking Dead. I was over it. We were both over it. We were very tired of the characters and very just felt bad.
Not
so,
drawn in.
No. And so I have to say that even though this show has a lot of the same beats in a lot of ways, you've still got the survival, you still got this, you know, wife. And now I think that when you have the Eve situation, I think that she reminds me a lot of Addison in a lot of ways, which includes some of the unlikability factor. There's a lot there going on. And so I'll be interested to see, but I am willing to stick with this one over Fear because I feel like that they have developed more of the characters and there's a lot less of that misunderstanding business and stuff that I just dislike so much in these types of shows. So they've kept enough information flowing and enough like, well, what's the next situation that's kept me interested. So I really look forward to it. Let's hope there is a season two.
I do. This podcast was brought to you in partnership with 3ifbyspace.net. That's the word 3ifbyspace.net. And the reviews written there by one Michelle Harvey. Go there to check out anything new on science fiction or anime or TV or movies, whatever. They cover it. We'll catch you next time. Thanks.
Catch us on iTunes or your preferred podcast software. Our website, dailyreview.com, that's D-A-L-E-Y review.com, Facebook or Twitter, or wherever you find us, please leave us a comment and a rating to let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for listening, pod people. Thanks for listening to my mom and
dad. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Just go home, folks.